Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. If you're watching on the YouTube channel, you'll notice right away this is a video episode also. We have an intense data episode about the Ravens draft success that I think has some very compelling methodology to it. Joining me for that is Dr. Craig Tanio. Doctor, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. Excited to be on the show again.
All right. I appreciate you coming on. Great discussion last time. And a new methodology here for looking at draft value. We always seem to get back the old AV measure from PFR as a starting point for this.
Yeah, Ken, what I was trying to do is kind of look at the upcoming Ravens draft from a fan's perspective and try to answer questions like, what were the Ravens' best drafts and picks? What were the worst? Are the Ravens getting better at drafting or worse? And then where does the value in the draft come from? Does it come from day one, day two or three, or from UDFAs?
All right. Outstanding. So UDFA is not technically the draft, but that's okay. That's a question we would really love to hear answered well is How do the Ravens do relative to the rest of the league in terms of UDFA value? We've heard about the UDFA streak, but how much in terms of UDFA value? So I'm going to take a step back here. I will have questions as you go, but I'd like you to introduce your methodology from top to bottom, a single calculation through and however you want to do it. And I'll have questions as we go to try and help clarify this for the audience.
Sure. So I started with looking at AV to measure the value of a player over time. That's the Pro Football Reference methodology. They will weight it for a career so that it weights some of the peak seasons a little bit more. And AV is not a perfect measure, but it is a very data-rich and available measure. I think it's very heavily reliant on playing time and volume-based metrics. It's very dependent on the overall team performance. And so it doesn't always do the best job of separating individual player performance from team performance. So, for example, last year, Patrick Queen and Roquan Smith's AV were quite close to each other, and we could see that the market thought different in terms of contracts. AV is also not really accurate from a draft class until about 4 or 5 years. And so probably the most recent draft class that we could start to really look at this well would be the 2020 draft class. And we're seeing what that value is as people are going out for contracts. One of the other disadvantages of the methodology is that it can overweight players who go to other teams later so that other teams get their value and the Ravens do not. Okay. But it is a good, I think a reasonable method for looking at value of a player. So what we look at
Let me interject for just a second here. There is one other thing, and that is that AV does not really take out the replacement level for a player. So if you thought that the general street available talent was an AV of 1 or 2, you should subtract that probably arithmetically from the bottom of AV, and you get a whole lot of players who aren't really worth much more than nothing. Out of the thing. Now that is it's a complicating factor. And I very much agree with your other point about AV in draft years being a hell of a lot more valuable than AV after draft years, where the team has to pay market value for that player. So it's really a great option on that. If you've heard Eric DaCosta's recent interview, he talks about really loving the fixed price of the draft and he knows what he's getting, as opposed to the volatility of buying on the free agent market.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the probably the best way to look at value from just a draft skill perspective would be understanding the value over the first 4 years before you have to pay market value. But what I like about AV is it ultimately is looking at the value that is actually coming out of draft picks, while some of the other methodologies that have been done before with trying to say what the value of the draft pick is certainly has some of the premium for certainty that a team might actually get their player, like, for example, with trading. But let's get back to the methodology. What we tried to figure out was what was the expected AV share of each pick. And there's a gentleman by Jay Pauley who did this analysis for a 2000 to 2020 period. And this could be done pick by pick, but he happened to use different bins. So pick 1 through 5 and 6 through 10 each got a average AV share, and then so on all the way down to the end of the draft. And in his analysis of 2000 to 2020, he really determined that Baltimore was the best drafting team in the league when you look at the gap between what the value of the share actually was and what the value was expected. And the top three teams were Baltimore, Green Bay, and Pittsburgh. And the bottom three teams were Detroit, the Raiders, and Cleveland.
I think that shows up as the case just about regardless of methodology. Those top three and those bottom three, seriously, either any way you cut it, are going to be the same.
Yeah. And so then when you kind of go down that next level, then there is the absolute difference between the actual expected share of the draft measures draft skill. And so you can use that number to get really a percentage of the draft. So the record is really Tom Brady, and the difference between his actual and expected share was 4.09% of draft value, which is actually more than entire draft class worth of value.
Let me stop you there for a second, because I want you to go through a specific example to point out, like, let's talk about Ray Lewis and point out what his expected actual absolute difference in draft skill measures would be from that.
Sure. So Ray Lewis, his expected...
Can you do me a favor here? I know there's probably 95% of the people are listening on a pod, but for those who are listening or who are watching on the YouTube, let's make that a little bigger so they can see this.
Okay. Sure. So Ray Lewis, he was number 25 in the draft, in the mid 20s, 26. Mm-hmm. And so the expected share would have been 0.82% of the total draft class value. And his actual AV was 3.27%. So the absolute difference of that is 2.45%. And then I converted that to a percentage because I think it's easier for us to understand intuitively. So that pick, he basically got almost 400%, 300% more value than the expected pick. But, for example, Jonathan Ogden, who was in the same class, his absolute value was significantly lower because he was the number 4 pick in the draft. And so even though he had a very good, percentage share, the expected share was significantly higher. So we are looking at these picks by what we expect the draft pick to yield, and then either converting it into a absolute number or a percentage number.
Now, that's no knock on Ogden. It's just being the 4th overall pick. It's very hard to realize full value out of that, depending on how you do it. But the expected share there, and one of the problems for Ogden, by the way, is he's grouped in a bucket with number 1 picks. So he's grouped in the bucket with Peyton Manning, for example. And not all the number 1 picks have worked out as we know it. But the JJ scale would tell you there's an extremely steep curve in those first 5 picks. Extraordinarily steep. So they would say already, the JJ scale would say that number 4 pick is worth a hell of a lot less than the average of 1 through 5.
Absolutely. And I use this methodology because it was AV weighted. And it's and this thing, it's called the PolyShare. But if you just look at, for example, the JJ scale would say that almost 5% of the draft value is in pick one. Other ones are flatter, but there's certainly viewpoints that really concentrate the value in the top picks.
Now, I think also this is important to note: the percentage of value is the percentage of value in the entire draft and Correct. Not just that round. So what I'm seeing there at the bottom with the box number you have highlighted there is about 61% of all value comes in the first round by the JJ method.
Correct.
That it hasn't worked out that way, obviously, in NFL history.
Yeah, because I think what happened initially, the JJ method was, I think, really determined empirically. Jimmy Johnson queried a lot of people around the league about what their individual charts were. And so it actually represented the currency of what was happening with draft trades. But the currency really is two different components. One is what the value actually is going to be of the pick. And then there's certainly a premium paid for certainty. And people, so that you know that you can get exactly the pick that you want. And that premium certainly goes up the higher you are in the draft.
I would say that notion exists in the business world and the finance world broadly. And one very simple way we can think of is even if the interest rate you can earn on your money is 0% in an asset, and yep. Let's say it's 3%, you're going to pay significantly more than that to borrow money. And that's it's akin to that when we talk about trading up for a draft pick and wanting to purchase something specifically. The cost of money then for you could say is something close to 4%, the difference between whatever the real interest rate is and what you borrow at. And that's true. I think that the notion of the JJ chart being like a fiat currency is a very good one for that.
Yeah. And you could have certainly used AV. There's a draft scale called Chase Stewart, where they try to adjust for the replacement player by subtracting two from both the numerator and the denominator, and definitely weights the higher picks more significantly. I didn't, for the purpose of this exercise, do that because we've been very fortunate as Ravens fans that we've never had to have the top three picks. It means that our teams are actually doing reasonably well and not bringing up the bottom of the league.
Yeah, Broncos and Seattle, the only other teams that have never had the number one overall pick. And right. I don't know that Seattle and Denver may have well had picks in the top three. The Ravens have not.
No. Yeah. And so we get that skill measured in two different ways. And then what I did with the whole concept of draft capital is just assume that the average team, is kind of in the middle, like 16th pick, and maybe gets one comp pick in the middle, and that's kind of the quote, average draft capital. Of course, that's a huge big assumption, but you have to start someplace, and then that kind of helps break out what happens between draft skill and draft capital. And so when you have a lot of picks and you're doing well in the skill, you're going to create a lot more absolute value. So, for example, in the 99 draft, it was a great draft in terms of the quality of the picks, but there were only four picks. So the absolute value of the draft was significantly less.
But it's still a very good draft skill rating for that year because they got four picks or they got value on really all four.
Absolutely. And then the final question is, how do you think about UDFAs? And so this was, I think, really the hardest question to answer because UDFA data is not as readily available in Pro Football Reference. You have to kind of pull it out sort of class by class. But what I could see in the league is if you looked in the 2023 league with about half the sample, about 12.4% of the weighted AV comes from undrafted free agents. And in that year, for example, the Ravens, 14% of their AV was from undrafted free agents. And the notable UDFAs on the 23 roster included Justin Tucker, Pat McCrary, Pierce, Keaton Mitchell, Gus Edwards, you know, so a number of players in which you don't have to spend draft capital. They're one of 15 that come on at the end of the draft. But I do, I included it in the draft because I think it's really a important part of the Ravens draft strategy that right after the draft, they are hitting the phones and trying to get the UDFAs as quickly as possible and absolutely have a reputation among the league that the UDFAs will get a shot at being on the roster and not just being, you know, there for practice. So
you look at those 23 UDFAs and you actually have four guys who the team is now paying market value for. They're certainly paying it for Tucker, mm-hmm. who's been in the league forever, and McCary, who's making $4.4 million or so this year. Pierce, who just got a new contract, and Edwards, who's been on his second contract and is now going to go on his third with the Chargers. But Mitchell is the only guy that they have who's a UDFA, is still from a UDFA. They have Patrick Ricard, for example. You said yep. some of those. Okay.
Yeah. And what you see here in here is, let's see if I can pull up the, make it a little bit bigger. This is sort of the players by ranked by absolute difference. And so you see in the top 10, you know, you see a lot of people of players that we would expect to be near the top, either Hall of Famers or future Hall of Famers. But in terms of recent players, for example, you know, Justin Madubuike is sort of number 32 by value. Keaton Mitchell is already on this list in a fairly high way, whereas Makari is sort of 52. Keaton Mitchell is sort of 38. There you can certainly capture the value of a player if they outperform in year one or year two. But oftentimes we know that it takes a couple of years to really judge a draft class.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Okay. So that, I think that tells a story at an individual level. Now, where'd you want to take it from here?
I'll just kind of go one. We don't have to spend too much time here, but this methodology does actually highlight some of those draft misses that we all remember, including you know, where Kyle Bowler is really top of the list.
Blow that up for us a little bit. I know people want to see this list.
Okay. Yes. This is all the groans a couple years later. So the top of the list would be Kyle Bowler, who the absolute difference was a loss of 0.7%. Then Sergio Kindle, who never get any AV, or Dan Cody. Then Bronson Kafusi. Matt Elam, Arthur Brown. I think Jay Graham was from 98, I believe.
He played in the 97 game against the Eagles. Yeah. I'm rewatching a lot of games this offseason, and he was unbelievable that day. And then he gets hurt, I think, in overtime in that game. And he never really came back to be any good. But there's a lot of these guys, obviously, are injury considerations. Some of them are kind of knuckleheads who were around, and it wasn't a matter of injuries like with Elam or Brown or Figures. But Cody, he played, I think, 14 NFL snaps and was just outstanding in them, but just he could not stay healthy.
Right.
And Kindle had the famous fall down the stairs, of course, and Kyle Bowler, he fits it right into that knucklehead category. So just some really bad decision-making both on and off the field. In terms of
And I do admit I did buy a Kyle Bowler jersey, so I still that must be somewhere in the closet someplace, but not worn recently.
Talk about that last name on the list though now.
Yeah, so you know, so Ajabo is from a absolute difference would be slated to be sort of number three on this list, but I think that it's really too early to tell. You know, there's a huge amount of variance in the first couple of years of a draft, and it's almost like wine just needs a couple of years to mature. This is really going to be a make or break year for Ojabo this next year. You know, I think we all wish that he might have been on the NFI, and that year one could have been pushed out. But right now, there's a huge difference between the value he has put out on the field, which is very little, probably two games max, maybe even not just one game.
He's got two sacks. Yeah. So I'm not sure if he might have played more than that. I think something tells me he has, but okay.
And so, I kind of pulled that out as too early to tell, at this point, because I think anything from 21, 22, 23 just has to have a little bit of an asterisk at this point.
I think you're absolutely right about that, by the way. There have been Ravens in the past who have not done much for two full seasons and then turned it on and been pretty good. And Paul Kruger comes to mind. He had a little bit of performance. He wouldn't be quite as bad, but he would have showed up still as a very bad pick through a couple of years and then really turned on. And then Dwan Edwards is a guy who didn't do anything pretty much for his whole first contract with the Ravens. And then he actually became a good player, stayed in the league for a long time after he got hurt in his pre-free agency year. The Ravens signed him for one more year and he's good. And then he left the Ravens and went on to hang around the league for quite some time.
Yeah. And then the flip side is probably like, Dwayne Starks, who played really well the first couple of years and then didn't after he left the Ravens. And so his weighted AV doesn't look that great, but it certainly was for the Ravens. So all of these lenses, everything's a little bit imperfect, but we use the best we can. So then when we look at overall performance, let's kind of look at this by, I just tried to divide it into 7-year eras and going from 1996 to 2023. And what you can see here is that for the total Ravens performance, their draft capital was 103% and their skill was 127%. So that means that they had average starting capital and were basically through skill able to turn that into about 134% of draft value, just arithmetically.
Hold on for a second, because I'm amazed by the 103% of draft capital. The 103% of draft capital means they've had 103% of a typical team over that period of time, and that's all of Ravens history. And I lived through the beginning too, but I've lived in a draft capital starved Ravens era where they never picked in the top half of the draft with a couple exceptions. But that those early years I would have thought were fueling that. And then I look at that and they were just at 100% of the draft capital for that era. I know they did trade away a lot of picks in addition to having some extra number one picks, particularly in 2000. It really surprises me that they're only 100% of the average draft capital for 96 to 02. It's tremendously surprising. And it's also tremendously surprising they're 103% for all eras. Even once you factor in comp picks, I wouldn't think you'd be that low. Now, remind me again, this is done on a JJ level or this is done on a FS or which scale are you using for the draft capital overall?
Yeah, I was using the poly method, and so what I basically took was this these picks sort of 16, 48, 80, sort of middle of the draft, and then assumed that in comp picks, an average team would just get one comp pick in the middle because there are 32 comp picks that spread out. So it's just kind of an assumption that of quote average draft capital. If you will.
Okay. So, now I understand. Now I think I understand. Okay. Yeah. So you're making comp picks. Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you, most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
It's worth less because they're end of the round picks, but you're putting them in the appropriate round, and you're probably pretty accurate on the comp picks. But the other picks, because the Ravens have typically drafted late, you're overstating the value of those picks in that 103% number. So I would argue the Ravens have been a lot better than that because they've typically drafted at the end of rounds, and you're assuming they're getting a mid round pick as your new as your denominator.
Well, actually, I mean, I do measure the absolute, the exact picks that the Ravens have, and I kind of compare it to the capital. And so, you know, I think as we go into some of the rounds, we'll be able to see, because there definitely have been some days where the Ravens have less than 100% capital. But I think what comes out of here in terms of skill is that, you know, Ozzie had an unbelievable start the first 6 years, you know, 96 and 2002 drafts, but that from a skill perspective, we don't look like we haven't been able to keep that tear. But from 03 all the way to 2023, skill's been relatively, you know, constant, if you will. And so I think that's good news for fans.
Yeah,
constant and good.
Yeah.
Correct.
And so what I loved about this presentation, where you're kind of showing to me ahead of time, was that I think it dispels a lot of the notion that draft picks are lottery tickets. When you so consistently outpace the other teams in what you do, and you're top three, and you're top three because you've been very consistent. You're frankly at the top because Ozzie Newsome and Eric DaCosta have been doing this together for 28 years. And DaCosta was in the building in 96. He very quickly ascended through, you know, things he's described very well and very eloquently in an interview recently, and was actually offered the GM job or made GM in waiting in 2007. Yeah, and then it took 12 years for him to get the job. But the notion that it's not been the same people even making the picks for the Ravens is ridiculous. It has been exactly the same. And they might be the only team in football that's true of.
Yeah. And I think that's I think that skill is has been remarkable. And then I think the other point about draft capital is that we see in these eras, you know, the average pick over the last 7 years has been the 24th pick. The average pick in 96-02 was the 14th pick. And so each 7 years, our average first round pick gets worse as the team performance in general has gotten better. But yet draft capital has gone up in 2017 to 2023. And that's, I think, really because of the strategies of the team to comp picks to really improve the draft capital. And so I think both of them, work together. So there's this next analysis really breaks down performance by day one, day two, day three, and the UDFAs. And I think it tells a pretty interesting story. You know, day one has really been a critical day, and the Ravens in general have excelled in their draft one, in their first round draft picks. The skill level is 137%, and they've only had a quarter of their picks been below expected, and they had a bit of a slump in 2010 to 2016. For example, with the Matt Elam and Perriman picks, but that's the day one skill came back the last 6 or 7 years. Day two has really been historically the worst for the Ravens, where the skill is only at 101% and the draft capital is actually less than 100%, with lower than expected draft capital in most of the eras.
So they've traded some second round picks over that era. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Day three, it gets both 16% higher skill and about 15% higher draft capital. That there's been some within the eras, the best skill has really been in the beginning of the Ravens history. And then finally, with UDFAs, what we're seeing is if we look at the Ravens' performance compared to league average, we're getting about the same improvement of UDFA performance that we would in day one. And that the UDFA value, if you will, is almost the same as, in terms of incremental value, it's almost the same as day three. You know, the actual percentage is about, maybe about a 40% of day three, but there's a significant improvement in performance. And so, the UDFA component is quite helpful in terms of overall, value of new players coming into the Ravens.
Okay, so let's talk about the UDFA methodology specifically, because it was something we had a lot of free talk about. Mm-hmm. But UDFAs are complicated by the fact that there are a number per year, some of whom make it and some of whom don't.
Yeah.
But the way you tried to target value was to take aggregate value of UDFAs throughout the league.
Correct.
And divide those by drafted value.
Yeah, actually, I looked at average value of on the rosters and by the value of the roster itself. So just in general, what percentage of the value of a roster is coming from UDFAs? Was not able to get it by draft year, if you will, but just more as a proxy, what percentage of a value of a team is coming from UDFAs.
Okay, but for a cross section then of all 32 teams, as opposed to just doing the Ravens, where you'd be judging the Ravens versus themselves, right?
Correct. Did it for half the league. So.
Okay, very good. So it's something we've always thought about the Ravens, and it's nice to see that assertion we've made about them for all these years is actually looking pretty damn good.
Yeah, and then the if you look at some of the best and worst drafts, what we see in here is that there's in terms of the top two drafts, I think they're really in a league by itself, which is the 2002 draft featuring Ed Reed, where there was an absolute difference of 5.07%. The skill was 234%. And then the Jackson Hurst draft, where the skill was 146%, but there was significantly higher draft capital of 132%. And so with the Ed Reed draft, you had a number of undrafted free agents that really bolstered the value there, including Bart Scott, Will Demps, Make Kimomayatu, and obviously the 2018 draft with Jackson. Not only did you get Mark Andrews and Orlando Brown, but you got a number of picks in the lower rounds like Bozeman, Sealer, and Gus Edwards, where they've also performed well above their initial draft choices. So
yeah. I want to put that number in perspective there. So for the 2002 team, that 5.07 number I'm seeing there, the typical team has a 32nd of the performance out of a draft.
Right.
So they're going to have 3.2% or something if I divide it out. And so 5.07 over 3.2 is the incremental number of amount of value they got out of the draft. So the Ravens in that 2002 draft, might be reasonable to say they got 2.5 times the value of the average team in that draft.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's skill gets set to 230%.
Oh yeah, of course you got a number for that, don't you?
And, yeah, and you know, for example, the Queen draft in 2020, we got about 60% more value, and so we're just seeing that in some of the comp picks that are coming down. That are going to happen for Queen and Stone and others. But I was surprised to see that be as good of a draft. I hadn't really, maybe there was some recency bias the other way and thinking that it wasn't as good. But that draft looks like it's going to really hold up quite well. Obviously the Ogden and Lewis draft was quite good in the first round, but the rest of the draft was not the same quality, with the exception of Jermaine Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
One of the questions on the table is what's going to happen with the 22 and 21 draft, where both at this point, the actual shares look lower than the expected shares. And we're really waiting to see, I think with Hamilton and Linderbaum, I expect that we will see improvement in there. Probably the big question, as we talked about before, is David Ojabo. And then with the Bateman and Oway draft, at this point, it's a little bit below expected share as well. And we'll need to see that in this next year as well.
Okay, and that does relate to all players that were drafted in that draft, as at least it's comparing them to that. So it's really a matter of volatility for the 21 draft. So yeah, I guess I probably should be more concerned than I am about that, but Oway and Bateman still have fairly bright futures, I think, and there's a good chance they pick up value in that. And I think that one of the problems with Hamilton from his rookie year was he didn't really show up with a lot of AV. In what he did, and part of it was he wasn't a starter the whole year,
right?
And had some problems there. So I know AV weights very heavily towards the starters. It also weights very heavily, as you mentioned, towards team performance, because it's based on points per drive on each side of the ball, and then allocates out the value above a normal team that you are in points per drive on each side of the ball to the individual players. So it's extremely tight methodology in terms of how it's done. It's done very well, but it still has some problems in terms of how you divide that value out.
Yeah, I think there's certain positions that don't get nearly the credit. But let's see if I have. No, it's not easy enough to see. I just when I looked at the AV of the 2023 roster, it did look reasonably accurate. I think there were some things that could be questioned. You know, the like I said before, Patrick Queen's AV was 15 compared to Roquan Smith's of 17. Lamar had the leading AV of 19, Matabike 15. So. And Hamilton was 13th. So you're picking up some of the stars sort of here. But I think there's certainly.
But anyone really think Hamilton was not as good a player as Queen last year?
I don't think
they're not going to be too many people. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. So, yeah. And that's I think in general the linebackers and the running backs get a little bit more value than they probably the market reflects. The in terms of the worst drafts, we don't obviously want to dwell on that too much, but just need to acknowledge that there have certainly been a set of drafts where the skill was around the 50-60% level, where we're only getting half the value. And we talked about with Dwayne Starks that was really more of an issue of career value rather than value to the Ravens. But then they're both in 2004 and 2010. We both didn't have a first round draft. And then the remainder of the draft wasn't good either. And so that really kind of
set
the Ravens back. And then you had 2004 and 05, which were both drafts sort of back to back, where that didn't do that well. That was the Mark Clayton draft, where Cody and Adam Terry really did have lower performance relative to expected.
Okay, let me jump back for a second. Mm-hmm. The Starks thing, we've had this discussion. I've had it on the show otherwise, but I just want to bring this up one more time.
Right.
If anybody's looking for that analytics project, that'd be a big breakthrough, that would be really cool. Try and separate out first contract performance from second plus contract performance. Now, the team does usually get something in terms of market frictions for that player's second or third contract, because they have compensatory picks. They have the franchise tag available to them. So they use that on Madubuike and derive value from that franchise tag, because he had a value, you know, potentially that, or you know, I guess observably, that was above the value they would have had to pay him for this year. They probably could have traded him as well and gotten more than the compensatory value. So it just kind of shows the value of the franchise tag as a market friction. But most of the value that you get from a player is on that first contract. And I know it's very difficult information to parse out, but if someone is willing to really go through the data analysis project of looking at career AVs and subtracting out the years that come after that fourth year, say, I think that is a marvelous project to go and dive in to detail. And Dwayne Starks is the player in Ravens history who provided almost all his value on the first contract. There've been a number of players who've gone other places and been good. And you mentioned Priest Holmes is a great example of a player who went on, had almost all his value with the Chiefs. And there you could pick out some others, certainly Zach Sealer, a guy who the Ravens let go. But anyway, separating out that first contract value from post first contract value, I think there's a weighted AV there in there somewhere, which might be maybe 3-1 weighting between first contract and renewal contract. So you still give some credit for the frictions that exist in the long career, but most of that value still is from that initial draft period.
Yeah, I think that this methodology just kind of captures, you know, what's really been the career performance, as opposed to, you know, what's the maybe the true, you know, strategic value of the draft. And mm-hmm. I think the method that you've been describing is definitely needed. You know, I've seen some things that are similar in terms of looking at that from the fourth and fifth year. I do believe Jason Fitzgerald has looked at that from a contract perspective, mm-hmm. and looking at what's the contract after the rookie year as a percentage of the top five contracts as by position. And, you know, what that really does argue for is a little bit of a flatter curve, but those numbers haven't been readily available to do this kind of, analysis, if you will. Mm-hmm. So, and then the final question I wanted to bring up was just, you know, how is Eric DaCosta doing, you know, compared to Ozzie? And I think it gets back into this question of which years do you look at? And if we sort of take the 2019 draft and 2020 draft and say those are 2 years that we have really good data for and that those classes have matured, we see that performance is really holding up. You know, the Ozzie's skill for all the years that he drafted was 131%. DaCosta's is the first 2 years is 133%. Draft capital is pretty similar. DaCosta has slightly higher draft capital from the comp picks. But, you know, the real question will be these next 2 years and what happens with the 21 and 22 drafts, because if you just add those together, then the skill does really go down. But I think it's still too early to tell.
So. Okay. All right. Craig, outstanding work here. Anything else that you want to summarize with in terms of this?
I think that, what I took away from this was that, the Ravens have been consistently skillful at drafts throughout their history, and that with this transition that's happened over the last few years from Newsom to DaCosta, that skill is still keeping up, which is great news for the Ravens. And I do think that what's happened in the last 6 or 7 years is we've multiplied that skill by higher draft capital as a result of our comp pick strategies. And so that puts us in a good position for the years to come.
Yeah, it's just, I really love seeing it. And you know, I get so frustrated with Eric for sick for calling the things lottery tickets when I think they're more akin to World Series of Poker entries. I won't go into that argument again, but clearly he values every pick he picks up. And you know, you talked about treating the when you can make a trade at quote unquote full JJ value, which is what I usually say in terms of the first round, usually doing very well. And that because of the flatter valuation of picks and the fact that the Ravens almost always are moving down, they're really gaining value in terms of a BPA strategy. They're gonna have a good opportunity to use that pick well at a later point in time. And I think even though there have been people complaining that the Ravens often have too many picks to derive value from that, I think that this analysis really debunks that as well. The Ravens have harvested, you know, a large amount of this value. The only exception I can really see to that in Ravens history is Zach Sealer being a guy they cut. You can also look at Geno Stone being a guy they cut and were lucky to get back. And so you could look at his draft value differently. But I don't think that argument really holds up too well, the notion that they have too many players. And they have occasionally made some bad picks, and they live with the result. Caillou Blue Kelly didn't work out. Right. A fifth-round pick, Snacks Myers, they hoped he would work out. He didn't work out. But they haven't been Chris Barnes. They haven't been bad about cutting those guys and just realizing, hey, you know, we made a mistake.
No, that's absolutely right. And I do think that what you see in the data is that day three, you know, which is oftentimes people are paying less attention to it, you get a significant amount of value out of that, as well as the UDFA. It all adds up. And in a Lamar era where we have to have every dollar count, I think those end up being more important than ever.
Yeah, and certainly when you don't have high end of the early day one and day two picks, you those are more important than ever in terms of percentage of the draft capital you have. So, yeah. Craig, really appreciate you coming on doing this. If people wanted to talk football with you, where could they do that?
I'm on Twitter at Dr. Tanio, and happy to chat with anybody.
All right, other folks out there, if you're interested in doing a film study short. Very much into the draft right now and have a ton of shows to do on that, and they'll be coming out. But I also want to hear from you. If you'd like to do a recollection series, talk about one of the Ravens of the past, just hit me up and let me know what player you'd like. DMs are always open on Twitter. If you have another idea for a show, something like this, maybe data and analytics driven, maybe not, where it's just, you know, you're passionate about some particular scheme and you want to talk about that, I'm all in for that. The more thought-provoking as Craig's work is, or the more interesting in terms of a discussion, the better. And the more passionate you are, that's the most important characteristic. So please hit me up, and I'd love to get new people on air, open up the mic as much as I can during the off-season here when we've got some time to do some fun shows as well. Craig, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks, Ken. Glad to be on.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.